You're listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of October 11th, 2021. Brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Conference examines housing crunch. Main Street makeover for Londonderry. And Fieldhouse proposal unveiled.
On Wednesday, October 13th, a day-long conference on Vermont's shortage of housing, especially that on the affordable and workforce end of the spectrum, was held at the Arlington Common, formerly the site of a Catholic church in Arlington. The conference attracted a wide range of local, municipal, and state officials, along with others interested in the housing picture and how to solve the current crunch in the housing market. Sponsored and organized by State Representatives Kathleen James and Seth Bongartz, the conference offered a series of panel discussions, beginning with an overview of the challenges and needs of the state from Josh Hanford, the state's commissioner of the Department of Housing and Community Development, and Stephanie Lane, the executive director of Shires Housing, a local agency that seeks to develop affordable housing in Bennington County. GNAT TV recorded the entire day's session, and the entire day's discussions will be available on our website, gnat-tv.org, and on our television stations. Other panels offered presentations and discussions by the staff of the Vermont Housing and Conservation Board, the Vermont Housing Finance Agency, and Jim Sullivan of the Bennington County Regional Commission. We had a chance to talk briefly with Jim Sullivan and Stephanie Lane during a break in the action.
You know, as somebody said in one of the sessions this morning, there seems to be a bit of a disconnect in the supply and the demand model that's going on. You know, the cost for producing new housing just puts the price out of reach for what people's earning capacity is around here. So, you know, when it costs, $500,000 plus for, to build a 1,500 square foot house, there's a real mismatch with what, people's earnings are in this area. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing. And a lot of things go into what drives that cost. Some things we can control and some things we can't. And so, the purpose of this session today is to try to identify the things that we can control and do the things that we can. And so, I look at it a lot from the municipal perspective, municipal government perspective. And so some of the things, we can do some things with regulation and planning and community development block grants and things like that. But, there's a lot of things that are outside of the control of the municipality too. And so that's why we have to work with, the regional housing providers and the state, the state agencies to provide supplemental funding to try to deal with that disconnect.
What do you see as sort of the biggest roadblock to get over in terms of generating more affordable workforce housing here in Bennington County? Is there a particular thing? Is it zoning? Is it permitting? Or some other aspect that just sort of slows that process down?
I think finding appropriate sites right now has been a bit challenging for us that are affordable. Also, the supply chain issues continue to create delays, which of course means more money for the project. And we are noticing some lag time with permitting and with wastewater permits and things like that. Aside from the cost of those things, they're taking longer and our projects are starting later.
Okay, so the whole COVID phenomenon has really slowed things down a lot.
It has. We're still managing to get our projects finished and they're leasing up quickly. Lake Perrin Village leased up in 45 days, which has to be a record for us. But yes, that's the biggest issue. We're ready to go. We just, we're pre-ordering all of our materials for our next project before we even get started, because we know we're going to run into problems and it's going to slow construction, and you don't want to pull your crew off and then have to bring them back. It's costly.
Many issues were touched upon, including help for the homeless, to permitting issues, and questions from the audience included those who had experience in trying to develop low-cost housing as well.
But my experience has shown recently that the largest issue is permitting on the state level, which particularly through Act 250 and the A&R, which bogs down the permitting process tremendously. Doing reviews that are done on the town level and approved by the town level, and forcing developers to repeat the process, and then adding a multi-$1,000 fee on top of that for a household. And so there's larger statewide issues I think the legislators are here have to look at, and along with that, to help facilitate housing, that the process itself is bogging down.
Personally, it definitely is going to have to be more work at the municipal level, for sure. The permitting, being able to purchase land is going to be very important. So I would like to see more participation from the local banking and mortgage associations. I mean, Vermont Housing Authority is doing a great job. I've done a little work with them. So it is going to take at the community level. The select boards are going to have to, you know, speed up the processes a little bit more, I think.
So I guess, what's your general sense of how this session has gone today? Your takeaways, and what's kind of been said today that really kind of made you think, we could do that here in Arlington or something?
It reassures me that all the talk about how important housing is in Arlington is absolutely on point, that this really is the defining issue of this town for this generation, and that progress on this matter is going to be how the politicians here are measured for the next 20 or 25 years.
Over the course of the afternoon, a case study of housing development in St. Albans was offered by its city manager, Dominic Cloud, as well as by local officials such as Janet Hurley, Manchester's Planning Director and Zoning Administrator, and Nick Zayas, Arlington's Town Administrator. The day concluded with a discussion led by John O'Keefe, Manchester's Town Manager, who described a project that's been under consideration for some time now, a housing project on Depot Street in Manchester using some town-owned property on the site of the former town hall. State regulations surrounding Act 250 were another subject that popped up during the day, and we had a chance to ask Josh Hanford, the housing commissioner, about that.
You know, allowing Act 250 exemption in these smart growth locations, our village centers, our designated downtowns, actually helps our environmental goals, our climate change goals, at the same time as providing the housing we need. I just don't think it's acceptable anymore to not build the housing that Vermonters desperately need in sort of fear of that will somehow impact our environment in a negative way, when we've shown that providing this type of housing in these dense smart growth locations actually does the opposite. It results in less driving, less development up in the hills, less forest fragmentation, and so it's time to do something about it, I think.
As the day wrapped up, we asked Representatives Bongartz and James for their assessments and takeaways.
You go.
Well, Seth and I were just talking about this, which is that I think anybody who attended today probably took away one really central message, which is that municipal leadership is the key to getting housing built in our communities. And Seth can riff on that a little bit, but that was an underlying theme of the day, and it was actually really inspirational and empowering.
And I think just to follow up on that, what it requires is towns to really commit to it, say we need this and we are going to make it happen. And then you begin to identify parcels, you can identify possibilities. And the other thing, I guess, that came out of today was a realization that there are a lot of tools and a lot of people ready to help make it happen, but none of it happens without the town saying, we need to do this and we are going to do it.
Yeah, and another thought that came out today, which I think a lot of people know, but you cannot emphasize enough how important the nuts and bolts are.
Yeah.
So water, sewer, zoning. So.
Yeah.
Do you think next year in the legislature this is going to be a kind of a top line issue for many folks? I mean, I know it's been discussed for several years, really, nothing new. But do you think there's any chance there'll be legislative action that will drive this forward?
Well, if nothing else, there's more ARPA money. $75 million committed last year, and more will absolutely be committed this year. I think there's a recognition throughout the legislature that housing that is affordable, not just technically affordable housing, but housing that is affordable is, you know, I don't know how you say what's the top priority, but it's certainly a very, very top priority for Vermont.
And we talk a lot with all of our colleagues, and I think it's clear, hearing from all parts of the state, legislators from all across the state are hearing that housing is at crisis level. Housing needs to be a top priority, and I think we'll see a lot of conversations about it in the legislature.
Again, recording of the entire day's conference will be available on GNET's website and TV stations for those who want to hear the discussions in greater depth. For now, and for the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. A project to study and analyze how to revitalize the main commercial district of Londonderry's North Village, the stretch from the Village Market and Shopping Center facing Route 100 near the intersection with Route 11, and down the Main Street to the West River and where Route 100 splits off and heads up towards Weston, is underway, led by a team of consultants from the Brattleboro-based Stevens & Company in conjunction with Londonderry's Planning Commission and interested local residents. The study, expected to last over the rest of the year and into next spring, will look at how the Village Center can leverage some existing assets, like the West River and other waterways that run through town, while looking at how to remedy flooding concerns and a sense that the North Village Center along Main Street could transition into a more walkable, inviting place to stop, shop, and recreate, and maybe live. The project will lay the groundwork for seeking future funding for implementation of the Main Street Master Plan. On Thursday, October 7th, about 30 residents converged on the Neighborhood Connections office at the Mountain Marketplace Plaza to hear from the consultants and offer some thoughts and ideas. This followed an online Zoom meeting held earlier in the afternoon, which drew a similar number of attendees. Mark Westa, a landscape architect with Stevens & Company, got things started with an overview of the project before turning to the audience for their input.
We're here to kind of talk about what we see, what we can map. We're here to try to provide alternatives and ideas. We're here to bring examples from other places. And then beyond that being your community, there are individual property owners that own property. And, you know, that's, in this country, that means a lot. And so we can't act like we're gonna force people to do anything or anything along that line. But what we can try to do is we can try to develop a vision that brings people together, that two people can say, you know what, I agree with that. Or oftentimes what I've found is one person wants one thing, one person wants another thing, and they don't see the way that both those things can exist. But sometimes through this process, we can sort of almost prove that it can exist. And so I can't guarantee that like we're gonna get there, but that's what we're gonna try to do. We're gonna create a vision. We're gonna try to create enough alternatives that then will become a few alternatives that then sort of become a preferred alternative that then hopefully enough people will be like, I'm on board with that. I wanna help.
Underestimating the flood aspects of the community. We've had some floods here where you're familiar with the mill and the furniture in the mill was washed downstream. The water was over the top of the bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, there were cows running down the stream. I mean, I think this totally underestimates, the FEMA map totally underestimates the volume of floods that we get, the so-called 100-year flood, which happens every 5 or 6 years here.
Yeah.
You know, our Main Street section is not as warm and welcoming as it could be. It's full of asphalt and, you know, blacktop. And to have a few more trees and not so much more open space, but more green space mm-hmm. would be, I think, a huge enhancement for the overall appeal of our downtown.
My vision of Londonderry proper is that it's a ski town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're three mounds, four if you count Okemo, that are all very close by.
Yeah.
Bromley and Magic neither have a real village in their base area. Stratton's is overpriced and far away.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we could have a real opportunity here, not just as a winter town, But if you go to other ski towns, and I mean, Ludlow's a decent example. They don't have a village, but they don't have a village at Okemo, but that town has gotten to be pretty robust.
Right.
After the meeting, we had a chance to talk with both Mark Westa and Sharon Crossman, who chairs the Londonderry Planning Commission.
The Planning Commission acquired a few new members, and new members had lots of energy and ideas, and they instantly aroused the Planning Commission to think about a lot of things that could be happening in town. And we didn't feel we could actually tackle that without some kind of a plan, because we're planners. That's what we do. So after a lot of those ideas were kind of vetted, and then it was like, well, how do we do this? We made a decision for the Planning Commission to apply for a grant, which it's eligible for, from the Vermont Agency of Commerce and Community Development that issues municipal planning grants on an 18-month rotating basis. They're maxed out at about $25,000, but that's enough for a plan, to hire a consultant to do a plan, as we have done, because we were successful in getting the grant. So that's how it got into this form.
Look at the information, the notes we took. We'll dig into those reports more that people talked about so we understand them again and better. And we'll really focus on starting to create these alternatives, which again are very, you know, we'll some of them will be very reasonable and rational, and some might be very pie in the sky. And we'll just work through those, and we'll sort through them, and we'll probably eliminate some, and then we'll come back to the community and ask them to help us eliminate more.
The next meeting for the Main Street Master Plan is likely to be held sometime in early November. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Plans for a proposed 67,000-square-foot field house to be located at the Dana Thompson Memorial Recreation Park in Manchester were unfurled on Tuesday, October 12th, at a conference room upstairs at Charlie's Restaurant. As proposed, the field house would include an indoor track, three multi-purpose courts, pickleball courts, a fitness area, and a climbing tower. It would be located at the rec park in between the existing park house and the roadway into the rec park. The storage barn used to hold supplies and equipment would be removed. The projected cost of the field house is $13,250,000. The Drunzik family's Right Track Foundation has pledged $3 million, and subject to approval by voters, the town of Manchester would contribute the land and another $3 million. Other towns across the North Shire, Arlington, Danby, Dorset, Landgrove, Londonderry, Mount Tabor, Peru, Sunderland, Weston, and Windhall, would be invited to participate and would be contributing towards the remainder via a bond, in addition to other donations and fundraising from other sources. Memberships would cost $125 per year for people from towns taking part in the project. Non-resident memberships would be $370. To give you a full picture of the proposal and the rationale for it, we're presenting the press conference in greater than usual length as it happened. Cynthia Gubb and Seth Bongartz of Gubb and Bongartz Nonprofit Consulting got the press conference started with an introduction and overview of the project.
So first of all, we just would like to welcome you and thank you for coming today. We're really excited about sharing the details of this project with you and to make a public announcement about it so that you can really start building momentum and getting this project constructed. So the whole idea of the North Shire Community Fieldhouse is building healthy, sustainable communities, and that would be through fitness and recreation, social interaction, with a secondary benefit of also creating some economic vitality in this area. We have a couple of main focus areas. The first is that this facility will serve a multi-town footprint. It's not just about Manchester, it's about bringing in other towns so that this truly is a regional facility that can serve the towns in this area. The second focus area is really to promote health, fitness, and social interaction across town lines. So, you know, a lot of kids at BBA have friends here, have friends over the mountain, maybe over in Dorset. So it's really to make it a friendly place and have that interaction. And then obviously we want to have diverse programming for all age groups. So this would include school activities, after school activities, weekend vacations, summer programs for youth. You could have basketball leagues, like Seth always calls them, what, geezer basketball? You could have rock climbing clubs for children, a senior walking club in the morning to walk around the track, and then have bone builders, and then meet in the lobby and have some coffee. But really, it's about building lifetime habits of healthy living. But in addition to those three main focus areas, we feel that this project has a lot of secondary benefits, one of which is to enhance the vitality of this whole entire area. It would also bring new economic activity to the region, but through a sports-oriented lens. We feel it will attract new residents and visitors to our area. Definitely a recruitment asset for businesses in town. We know how hard it is to find employees, so having a facility like this would certainly be an asset when you're trying to recruit somebody. It could be an additional asset to our local schools, and would also be an attraction for our lodging properties, because lodging properties would have access to the field house for their lodging guests. So jumping right in, this is the site plan. So if you're familiar with the rec park, here's Route 30, and you make your right into the rec park road. Make sure you don't trip over this and end up with a concussion. Currently the road bends around, but the road would be redesigned so that this building could be tucked right in the corner. Additional parking would be created here right next to the field house, in addition to new parking over here above the existing parking. So there'll be lots of parking for people to use the field house, but also other amenities at the rec park. Lots of handicap parking. There'll be a team bus parking spot, so when buses come in, they can stop here, drop off the competitors, they can go into the field house, and the buses can move on and park elsewhere. Existing pool house and park house are here. This would hopefully eventually be future paddle tennis courts, a new location for the basketball court, but it's a really nice setting for the proposed field house, which would be about 67,000 square feet. So, as you saw on the first slide, this is a photorealistic rendering of the building, which looks fantastic. I mean, it's really great to see how much light there is. You can see all of the windows all the way around the building, so that there'll be a lot of natural light filtering into the premises throughout the day, which is especially important in the winter because, as we all know, it's very dark here. But very welcoming. You know, you almost feel like these people are real and actually doing things right here in front of the field house. Some of the facts about the field house, as I said earlier, it's about 67,000 square feet. It will be a very energy efficient building. They'll have solar panels on the roof, a renewable energy heating source. It's centrally located with easy access from all parts of town, from Dorset, from Manchester, from the schools. There's convenient parking, as you saw from the site plan, to the building. It already has access to sewer and water, so it's there. That's an expense that we'll not have to deal with, except to hook up the building. Because it's town property, there's no cost for the land, so that's a big savings there. And there's really minimal infrastructure that's needed. So it's a great location for a building like this.
Well, it's just a huge, that's a huge factor, the fact that we have the...
These three things
are huge savings for the building construction.
I'm going to add that the ground conditions require a minimum of site work, relative to level and good soil conditions.
So no blasting, hopefully. This is the first floor plan. So we also have a plan back there if you want to take a closer look after. But the idea was to make a facility that is very flexible. So there's three courts in the interior of the track, And these courts can be configured for pickleball, volleyball, basketball, indoor soccer, which is called futsal. Or you could use the whole area for lacrosse practice or spring practice for different sports.
Baseball.
Yeah, baseball. On one end, we have a dedicated pickleball court. On the other end is a 45-foot climbing tower, which we're working with a design firm that does nothing but design climbing towers and climbing facilities. The nicest feature about this huge building here is that there's a 200-meter track, so seniors can walk on it in the winter, summer, spring, fall. It can be used for indoor track practice for teams that have, or schools that have indoor track teams. It also, they're not pictured here, but it also has the capability to do shot put, long jump, high jump, and pole vaulting. Here in the blue area is a fitness room, so that would have cardio machines such as rowing machines, some treadmills, bikes, stair climbers, anything to get your heart going, and then a set of weights and other equipment that can help you keep fit. There's a multi-purpose room on the first floor, which is about 1,500 square feet, and that can be used for a lot of different things. Some of the things that we've discussed are arts and crafts, bone builders, chair yoga, and stretching. Could be a childcare space. So if you have a program for young parents, they could come work out, walk the track, run the track, and then there could be some sort of programming in that room for children, toddlers. It can also be a meeting space for sports organizations. So the ideas are limitless, really, but it's a really nice, great space. And then, of course, the lobby is all open. There's seating there around the outside edge, tables, and a little cafe so people can get a cup of tea, some water, coffee, and sit and chat with their friends after they've played geezer basketball or paddle tennis or walk the track with their friends. So this is the second floor. And just to orient you, this part here is cantilevered out over the track. And these are, again, multi-purpose rooms. People can stand here, and if their kids are playing in a basketball game, they can watch them from there, or if there's some other activity that their kids are involved in, they could watch from there. These could be team rooms. This could be used for golf simulators. So again, a lot of flexibility built into the whole building. The locker rooms are on the second floor, and there's two sets. So if you're having a soccer game outside in the summer, the players would come in and change and get ready, and then afterwards shower and leave. Again, a multi-purpose room, which is about 527 feet, group meetings, bridge groups, homework club, vegetation space. It's also a conference room and an executive director's office. So these are the amenities I just went over. One thing I did not mention was the batting cage for baseball practice. So have some batting cages that can come down, and local kids can get up to speed or practice for spring baseball. Let's see, did I miss anything else? So these are elevations. And again, if you'll notice, all around the building, we have a ton of windows. And again, this is something that will provide a lot of natural light, which is just fantastic. It's not like some of the buildings you see that are just buildings with no windows.
Cindy, the one on the bottom is probably that's the one that you'd be looking at from the road. So that's, okay, if you're standing on the new fields, right, north of Applejack, that would be your vista, right?
Right. Yes, that's correct. That's the main entrance. And then this is the climbing tower window.
And the park house is on the left.
Correct. The other set of elevations from the west and south. And then we get into programming opportunities. So the idea is to really make this place just be a vibrant center of activity. And we first kind of brainstormed on activities programs, which could include after-school care, which would be like a combination of getting homework done, and then kids have activities and maybe some food. Baseball practice, basketball, bingo, bone builders, cheer, which is cheerleading, dodgeball, flag football. I mean, the list is two columns long, so there's really a lot of opportunity for getting a lot of things going here. But then in addition to that, we thought about the user groups. Now, who would be using this facility? So that could be bridge groups, Castleton, coaching clinics, contracted personal trainers, elementary schools in town, high school athletics, indoor track teams, just program. You know, some kids don't want to learn how to ski or cross country, so.
So the, just at that end, the real point of this is that a lot of just constant activity, constant programming, and clubs, like be it climbing clubs or other kind of clubs. So they, on weekends especially, and during the, but evenings and during the day, everything from little kids on tricycles to toddler tumbling to seniors is just constant programming and constant and a lot of clubs.
And I guess the overall thing that we want to try to convey is that this is a building for all ages to take advantage of, and the programming will reflect those types of programs. So that, you know, as I said, there'll be something for seniors, something for middle-aged people, toddlers, teens, tweens. In past conversations, people have talked about a teen center, a senior center, a community center. This is a building that can fulfill all of those needs. So we're really excited about what this building could provide.
The spaciousness of this building really provides so much room for all these different groups. Now, obviously, you've got some groups that use the facility at specific times, like after school or during the daytime, but there's room for preschool programs and senior programs all happening at the same time. I do think that this is, you know, we've heard about a senior center or a teen center or a youth center. Indoor athletic space has always been a big concern of the rec committee. So I think this checks all those boxes.
Seems like you should divide this. So the operating strategy, the town of Manchester would own the field house. It's on the rec center property. It has the you know, all the infrastructure is there. And we looked at different models, and in the end, it made so much sense. It was so obvious in the end, the town would own it. And the town would be able to roll things like payroll, insurance, et cetera, for this building into its budget, which would really help. It's just kind of obvious that it makes sense for the town to own it. The real executive director would oversee the field house. But the real issue here, or the really important point, is a nonprofit oversight board. And the idea is that each participating town, this is a multi-town facility, each participating town would have one rep on an oversight board. And that board would work directly with the executive director, doing things like preparing the budget for the field house, looking ahead to future needs, and really being the key contact and the key point at which for giving direction to the staff. We've worked very hard on the budget to make sure that we have a self-sustaining operating budget. And operating costs will be covered by a combination of memberships, court usage fees, facility rentals, tournament fees, equipment rentals, and sales. But the real issue, it's memberships and court usage fees will be the key. And this is really key here. This facility is here, its real purpose, in some ways, it's, when it comes right down to its only purpose, is to improve the lives of the people who live here in our participating towns. And that's why the Right Track Foundation got interested in this, and that's really what's going on here, is to make something that is accessible and affordable to the people who live here, and give them an opportunity to which, access to an opportunity that they would otherwise not have access to. And so the The fees for residents of participating towns are very low. There are fees, but they are very, very low. They're well below market rate, and that's the real point. So it's in fact accessible to everybody. Energy efficient design reduces operating costs. Kirk has thought about that throughout. Any excess income that comes out of the budget, because the budget actually does show a surplus, will go into a capital fund reserves and to help with scholarships as needed. But I think the capital fund reserves is going to be the key point there. And the Right Track Foundation has guaranteed to make sure that the operating budget works for the first 5 years. It might take, it takes a little time to adjust and make adjustments, but the Right Track Foundation is guaranteeing the budget for the first 5 years. Here's where we get to the cost of construction. After a lot of professional consultation, we're very confident in the cost of construction being $13.25 million. Financed through public and private investors, the Right Track Foundation, which is not only covering all of the soft costs, which is huge and has gotten us to this point, is also committing to the first $3 million for construction of the field house. The town of Manchester is looking at putting in $3 million. Of course, that would first require approval of the voters at a town meeting. And that would be $7.25 million. And this is where, what we're trying to do is build a facility that no town could build on its own. And so the idea is to build a multi-town facility that actually then serves the needs of the people of this area. And you can't have one without the other. And so looking for the other towns, we'll be meeting with other towns, there will be public meetings and trying to get people in other towns interested in committing a proportional amount of money consistent with their population and grant list, proportionate to the $3 million that Manchester is putting in. On top of that, we'll be looking for business contributions and then, in the end, closing any gap with private donors. So, participating towns would be true partners in the project. Towns that contribute to the capital costs are partners in perpetuity. No annual contribution because we are satisfied that the budget is going to work and is going to carry this operation. And as I mentioned earlier, each town that comes in as a participating partner will have one rep, Senate model, if you will, on the Fieldhouse Nonprofit Board. And these are the rates on which we built the budget. Resident memberships of, for instance, $125 for a single or $250 for a family, that is substantially below market rate. And the idea is that it's affordable to everybody.
Those are annual, right?
Yeah, annual rates. I'm glad you said that, yes, because other facilities, they would be monthly, and this is annual. And students, we're looking at $20 a year for 6 to 13, and for kids, basically high school kids, $50 a year. So again, very, very affordable rates. And non-resident rates, market rate, these are the minimums, but at least market rate, which is likely going to be much higher than those numbers. And for people who live in participating towns, their residents also, not only do they get the very, very affordable rates and below market rates, they get preference for memberships if there's only so many available, and preference for times on the course. So. This is, there's a system, for determining how much we would ask each town to contribute or consider contributing if they want to participate in the project. And it's based on a combination, as it relates to Manchester's $3 million, it's based on a combination of population, grant list, and distance for Manchester. All of those are factors that have gone into a formula for looking at the ask from each town.
So we discounted the capital contribution if a town is farther away, because obviously it's going to take a little more effort to get there.
So the real point about this is if you take a town like Sunderland, just by way of example, for $438,000 at this point, that this probably get adjusted a little bit, but call it $450,000, gets access to a $13 million facility. And its residents have that forever. At those reduced
now, when you talk about capital contribution, excuse me, though, that is a proposed 30-year bond amount?
Yes, that's a, well, no, that how they finance it is up to them, actually, right? But that's the contribution that they, but yes, it would likely be by bond from the various towns.
I mean, that's where you come up with the annuals based on that.
Yes, yes, I'm sorry, you're right about that.
We took an example of a 30-year bond at 2.1%.
Which was at the rate it was when we talked to bond council. Mm-hmm. So.
And those totals, go back to that again, please. So those totals and the cost per year, that's the potential annual contribution from each town. For
over total. Here on the right.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, okay.
Just what they would be paying back on the bond.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other, again, we want to make clear that the real reason for this facility is to improve the lives of the people who live here.
I want to hold you there for a minute. Is there a facility like this that's available for public use anywhere in Vermont?
No.
No.
The colleges, Middlebury College, UVM, have facilities, but they're not available to the public except UVM for some parts.
For organized high school events, sometimes UVM will open their facilities. I'm struggling to think of another facility that's like this anywhere. There's a couple smaller.
Comprehensive.
Yeah, there's a couple. There is a place in. There's a couple places up in Chittenden County that
have parts of this,
but nothing, even the inside, the big box playing area, nothing close to that.
Yeah, I think we kind of concluded over a year ago, the only comparable facilities to this is Middlebury College's, which is not open to the public.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the program. Questions.
What happens if some towns say yes and some towns say no? Is there a fallback strategy for if some towns but we're not interested?
Frankly, that will probably happen. And it will just then be a matter of how much private fundraising we have to try to do to close the gap. The more towns that come in, the less that happens, and the more opportunity for the people who live in those towns. So this is kind of the. It just makes well anyway. We hope towns will carefully consider whether they want to commit and make this available to the people who live there.
And the annual bond cost that was on the slide earlier, that would be what the town would pay each year, voted by voters at a town meeting. And then residents wanted to take, they still had to pay the $125 for the individual member on top of the town contribution.
Yeah, what you're gaining with the town contribution is paying significantly below market rate.
You get the resident rate.
Access, the resident rate.
And if your town decides not to come in, then you're treated as a non-resident.
And its market rate, which would end up being several times higher.
And I think there's two points to make. One is that the communities would very likely have their own bond vote and make their own payments to the bond bank. It wouldn't be the town of Manchester's bonding at all, and then they're paying the town. They have their own arrangement. And I think the other thing too is there's a real potential for. We want to make sure that the memberships that are committed to, that the facility isn't overwhelmed with users. So residents, people that are from the participating communities, would get first shot at memberships. After that, If the number of memberships is too high, then we probably go to like a lottery system or something like that for non-residents.
On that same bond chart, the numbers that you have for the community contributions, are those recommended minimums, or is there wiggle room there for?
No, it has to be a formula because it has to be fair for every tenant that comes in. And to be clear, I wasn't just going back to your question a little bit. Would be a single vote in a town because the town would be voting to commit their share through one mechanism or another, likely a bond, and then they're done. Once that's done, they're in, and they are in perpetuity. They're resident rights and resident preference for use.
And it's set up as an intergovernmental agreement between the communities.
And you know, this on this scale is only going to happen if enough towns come in. To kind of go into your question. It's a regional facility, therefore it requires regional participation. So we're hoping that people see it and take it as an opportunity and consider carefully coming in.
And we'll be going out to all of the communities to do presentations so they see what it's all about.
And Seth, just to be clear, the list of communities that you provided, if there's other communities that were interested that are outside that list,
yes, of course,
we would entertain those. But the community list is largely set up either by, well, obviously what's surrounding Manchester or the other arrangements that we have for regional government, like the Taconic and Green School District, BRSU, to some extent, although not all of them, the Burton sending towns as well.
Yeah, it's really proximity.
Yeah. But if Shasbury, for example, was interested, we obviously hear them out.
If the proposal meets with a positive response during town meetings, where area residents will have a chance to weigh in, and needed permits acquired, construction could start next year with an eye towards an opening 12 to 18 months later. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.